Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th of March, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you frozen but lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Now, those of you who actually can hear us know that the transmitter is down. And that's a bad thing, but both the Jazz 90.1 Listen Live audio stream and the YouTube channel, Steve Ray, although he is somewhere in the Midwest, one step ahead of the law, he has managed to get the YouTube audio stream up and running.
It's
so
nice that he thinks about us while he's one step ahead of the law.
It is good. It is good. He's probably
so thoughtful.
Stopped in a little gas station in the middle of the desert in a little oasis. And
hang on, guys. I'll get this back up for you.
Yeah, right.
What a guy.
He's like, what a guy. So if you see Steve today, those of you somewhere out in the Midwest, one step ahead of the law, don't stop him because he wants to stay ahead of the law, but say hi. All right, today's news, of course, there's just...
it's been a week.
It's been a week.
Locally and nationally.
Well, we'll start with this national news. Thousands of documents said to detail the CIA's hacking tools were published by WikiLeaks on Tuesday. They included allegations that the CIA has developed ways to listen in on smartphone and smart TV microphones. The CIA has been criticized by civic rights groups who say that the agency, civil rights groups, who said that the agency stockpiled security flaws in devices to use them for its work, but left the population at risk by doing so. It's not a surprise that people who have a mission to find bad guys and protect nations are using every means at their disposal to gather intelligence and a focused target. If the CIA doesn't have capabilities for eavesdropping, it's not doing its job. Most of the leaked documents are about targeted attacks. This is not about mass surveillance and vacuuming up a haystack of data to search for a needle. They need warrants. They can't just tap into any phone. It doesn't work like that, at least so far. One of the reasons people have faith in the security services is that they do tend to obey the law, and when they don't, it comes out. Homes are becoming increasingly smart with everything from light switches to voice-activated kitchen appliances connected to the Internet. If unsecured, these could reveal our activities in the home. The concept that intelligence agencies, I don't know that they're intelligent,
well,
but they are intelligence.
Yes, they gather things to know things. So,
the concept that intelligence agencies are doing broad personal surveillance using these devices is not realistic. The resources to make sense of all of the data just aren't there. We should be much more concerned as to what online criminals might be able to achieve with these devices. There are plenty of examples of things such as baby monitors being open to the wider Internet.
Oh, yeah.
The documents published by WikiLeaks detail ways in which some Samsung TVs could be used to spy on their owners. It's unlikely the exploit was widely used. They're talking about a very few models of Samsung TV. If you read the documents, they've been vulnerable for a while. It would be surprising if the CIA was not looking into that. Has the CIA remotely hacked them? No. Are you remotely hacked? Really unlikely, and here's why. They have to get into your home and plug a USB drive into them.
Right. Especially those TVs, right?
Exactly. That's unlikely to have happened to the vast majority of you. Anybody worried that their appliances were spying on them should just unplug them. Of course, that advice may not help those of you with a modern voice-controlled fridge freezer. You are far more likely to be a victim of cybercrime or ransomware than happen to become a subject of interest for an intelligence agency.
Absolutely.
Encrypted messages, encrypted messaging apps offer people some peace of mind that their private messages cannot be intercepted as they travel across the Internet, as the messages are scrambled. The CIA documents describe methods to compromise Android and iOS, which could let agents read messages sent via encrypted services such as WhatsApp or Signal, by hacking the endpoint of the phone. The document did not suggest the CIA had cracked the encryption of either platform.
That's right.
Instead, the messages could be read by compromising the endpoint, the sender or receiver smartphone, where the messages are already decrypted. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. The CIA is hacking everything. And the choices are, OMG, I must become a Luddite. I'm far more worried about malware and ransomware. I've wrapped my phone in tinfoil and my head. I can't discuss this here. Meet me in the forum. So far, we have 30 votes. And I'm far more worried. Oh, look, we have reasonable people. Half the votes are people who are more worried about malware and ransomware. But I know that you'll have more to say about this because, well, you're you. So if you scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, the first choice there is the forums. And if you click on that, it takes you to the list of forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And so far, at least at the moment, the first poll discussion is 11 March 17. The CIA is hacking everything. And so far, I'm the only post, but you can join us there. And of course, if you're listening to us online, you can join us via phones, which I believe are still working. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I think the biggest problem I've had with the news this week regarding the CIA, I don't want to say leak, but let's say discoveries that have been made, is the way that the media in general has grabbed it and sort of run with it. The media, unfortunately, has devolved to the point where they are really just chasing eyeballs. They really want you to come to their site, read their stuff, and be there so that an ad can load and so that the media website can say to their advertisers, look, we've got lots of people that come to us, therefore pay us some money for these ads that you can run at our site. And what that leads to is a bunch of people who are going to write really shocking headlines in an effort to get you to come to their site.
Right.
And unfortunately, the news, the actual news, is not that exciting. So they really try to...
No lie.
They really try to whip up what's going on and make it sound way more sensational than it is. And it's just so frustrating and disappointing that it makes it really
tough to know precisely
what's going on.
Right. Nobody's going to click on a link that says the CIA has not been hacking you.
Yeah, they'll give it a little like on Facebook, and then they'll keep scrolling, right? Good news. Thanks.
Thanks. Great. Excellent.
Good to know.
Good to know. So the tools are out there. The real issue is how secure are the tools? That is to say, if the tools themselves get it, not just the fact that the tools exist or even the method that the tools use, but if the tools themselves get out into the criminal population, then yes, you will be as vulnerable as city states are now, I guess.
Yeah.
But the basic idea is that the tools that are used by the CIA are not, in fact, being used for domestic surveillance without some sort of warrant.
Judicial review, yeah.
Right. And without that warrant, without that review before the warrant is issued, they simply don't do that. And we know this because throughout its history and currently, the government is a sieve. Everything everybody's doing is known by everybody else anyway. So if it were happening, we would know it.
Yeah. If you're being hacked, it's most likely not them.
Right. Now, that doesn't mean you should relax, because there are still all the bad guys out there.
Sure.
And you have to be very careful of the bad guys.
That's right.
But the CIA is not, at least in this instance, among them.
No, if they're going to go, they're going to go over bigger fish. And sorry, you and your little world and what you might be ticked off with or support or that. Unless it's going to go against national security or anything else, a major threat.
Right.
Yeah, you're not even close to being on their radar or really care much.
Delusions of grandeur.
Yeah. Right. You got to be, they might want to see you.
Now, there are automated systems that are sifting through all of those data. So if you said on Facebook, I want to kill the president or I'm going to bomb Congress or any of those sorts of things, then yes, you would become a person of interest.
Yes.
And they would at least look into you a little bit more closely and then decide what to do next. But if you're just saying, oh, I think the president is an idiot, or I love the president, but I hate, I don't know
his,
who.
Yeah, this or that.
Who cares?
His tie is ugly.
His tie is ugly.
And the scotch tape with it is not so great either.
right. They don't care. They really don't care. That's not something that you're going to have to worry about in general. The real issue, of course, is that, and we humans are very bad at understanding scope.
Yeah, evaluating risk.
Right.
Yeah.
And in general, we don't understand just how much raw data goes over the internet every second.
Yeah. Still, most of it's spam, right?
Most of it's spam, yeah. But the point is, the finding you in that spam, they really have to look for the big trigger words. Like I said, kill, bomb, blah, 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 blah. Those are the words they look for. Those are the things that they're interested in. You saying, I don't like the president, or I wish he would retire, or whatever it is you think, it gets lost in the noise. They're not looking for that. They're looking for credible problems, and you're not all that credible. So,
they want to be able to link it to a lot of other things, right. A lot of other factors, right? They're not just going to take one piece of evidence,
right? And
use that.
And they're also not stupid. If you may be thoroughly disgruntled,
maybe you are.
Right, you may be that.
Not you, Nick, but just...
Right. Oh, of course not me. I'm all sweetness and light, and don't you ever forget it.
That's right, until you don't give him his coffee.
Right, exactly. Just give him that coffee, stand back for about, 3 inches of coffee,
right.
and then we can talk.
Maybe.
Maybe. But in terms of that, you know, they might look, but again, see that you're just a blowhard and move on. The threat that we should be facing, at least so far, is from the bad guys, the crooks, the people who are putting out the malware, and the ransomware and all that stuff. Those are the people that we really need to protect ourselves against. Now, the good news for those of you who are as paranoid as I am, the good news is that the protections that you put in place for one work for the other two.
Oh, it's a twofer.
It's a twofer. So it's BOGO.
That's right. But buy one, get one.
And so protecting yourself against the bad guys, the malware, the ransomware, all of that stuff, goes an awfully long way to protecting yourself against your perceived but unrealistic threat from the CIA. So keep doing what you're doing. But for whatever reason you're doing it, it's going to work. So that's good. That's the good news.
Yep.
Protect yourself and you'll be all right.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that doesn't work is security through obscurity. Oh, they can't possibly be interested in me. Whether you're talking about the CIA or the bad guys, they're just not interested in me. The bad guys are interested in everybody.
Oh, yes. That's a blanket statement.
A blanket statement because you have a credit.
You have a wallet.
Score. You have a wallet.
You are a life support device for that wallet.
Even if they can get at your email list.
Yep.
You're of value to them because that's stuff they can collect and then turn around, resell
and sell it
to the spammers.
Right.
Oh, I meant to tell you. Forgot to tell you. This past week, I was working on my Chromebook.
There you go.
Okay.
And I pull up this one. I'm working on a few tabs. All of a sudden, this other tab opens up and says, "Oh, you got to call Microsoft. There's a problem
just
with
like
your,
I have this one.
Yes. With your system. You better quick, you know, notify them when you call this 866 number because, you know, your system is in danger."
Oh, this is going to be good. Tell me you called them, please. Oh, come on.
My phone was... And yeah, I'm not going to give them my cell number.
Look, you can only use that excuse for like one more week, okay?
That's right. Oh, yeah. I've been getting a lot of calls from blocked numbers and people I don't know and stuff like that.
Well, I've taken on your attitude.
Oh, yeah.
And Sandy just about, you know, was wondering what the heck I was doing because they pick it up, you know, and there's that deadness. And all of a sudden it goes to a voice.
Right.
And I go, "Congratulations, you're caller number 5. Can I have your name, please?"
Click.
I do. I pick up the phone. If I don't recognize them, I say, "Thanks for calling Soundbite. You're on the air. What's your question?"
Joe Spezza, Joe speaking.
And there's dead silence. Click.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it really is. It really is, because you can just imagine the expression in the other end.
Yeah, it's like, huh?
Right.
Oh, boy.
Check that one off.
Right. Yeah, no. You really have to pay more attention than you did, and that's really the secret to keeping yourself safe on the internet. Whether we're talking about bad guys, the CIA, I don't know who, pay attention. Don't just randomly click on stuff, and you'll be better off. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Dennis Worcester.
Still?
Yep.
And it is 24 minutes after the hour, and we are still sound bites. Ooh. Hey, this will be exciting because Dennis just got one of these for Christmas.
Yep.
More and more of the devices we own are listening all the time.
Oh, come on.
Your wife's not listening, is she?
No, this was her. She was...
Wait,
just
hear
confirming
this.
What she thinks. All right, let's hear it.
Wait, hear this. Amazon's Echo, also known as Alexa,
yeah,
and Google Home, also known as Google Home, are always listening for their trigger words. So is Cortana on your computer. So is your phone, your tablet, your television, your refrigerator. You get the idea.
The CIA.
No, the CIA?
Another one.
Hello? We're already pretty used to all of that, but the real question is, what happens to all of those data? What do your devices do with the audio they capture? Well, we may find out soon. In a case in Britain, Amazon has agreed to hand over data from an Amazon Echo that may have been operating as an alleged murder took place.
Yes, I did hear about this.
Which was allowed, by the way, only after the defendant said it was okay to do. Victor Collins was found dead in a hot tub in Arkansas. There's a fate word. No, that is dead. Okay.
I thought this was a British thing.
Yeah. Well, that's where the guy being accused lives.
Oh, okay.
In November of 2015, his friend James Andrew Bates, there's the British name.
Sounds very British. Yes.
Denies murdering him. Prosecutors think the Echo may have captured fragments of audio from the scene as it listened for commands. One witness said music had been streaming from the device during the evening. Mr. Bates said he was asleep at the time, and the data may hold clues as to who was with Mr. Collins when he died. Apparently, the always-on Echo speaker makes recordings of audios it hears from a fraction of a second before it detects a wake word, either Alexa or Amazon, and those data go to Amazon servers. So basically, it's always listening, but throws away all its data until it hears the trigger phrase. Well, that's nice. The important question for most of us, however, is how secure is this from being hacked? I guess we'll find out. Do you have an Alexa or a Google Home? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
All right. So we did get one of these at Christmas.
Yep.
And my wife does not like it. She is not comfortable with having a microphone that is listening all the time.
Yep.
And I said to her, honey, here's the thing. You're right. It is listening all the time, but it is listening for a specific waveform. It's listening for a specific word. And unless it hears that, it is not sending anything out of the house. And I can do the packet traces to prove it. But that was not enough to convince her. And she said, nope, just get it out of here. So I took it to work and I set it up there and it's been fine. But what I'm hearing from that story is, number one, it's not blindly listening and transmitting that data nor storing it for later retrieval, except for, and according to the story that you read, when you give it the wake word, and I won't say that for all the people who might be listening, speakers in a room where there are those things.
Right.
When you say,
I'm so tired of those commercials.
Hey, Shlomo.
Hey, Shlomo.
Or Alex, go do this.
Right.
So we'll say, but when you give it that wake word, apparently it's listening for some very, very small period just before.
Well, it's always listening, but when it captures the wake word, it captures a quarter of a second or whatever.
And then sends that out in order to be processed.
Right, right, right.
Okay, so I guess this particular lawsuit, they're hoping that those potential... They're assuming that while an attack was happening, Somebody was shouting out the word Alex with the A at the end, and then the fractional seconds there will be sufficient to get some kind of knowledge?
Apparently.
That seems unlikely.
Well, we'll certainly be following this case with great interest. As I said, I had bought a Google Home because I'm a Google guy, and you know, Google is the ecosystem I live in.
Sure.
But then at Christmas, the Alexas were only $39, so I thought, well, what the hell?
Yeah.
So I bought one of those as well. And I find that for me, because I live in the Google world,
right,
the Google Home is much more useful to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I can do all kinds of things with it. Everything I try to do with the Echo Dot, it comes back and says, I'm sorry, you're not signed up for that, or you're not,
right,
you know,
it's
whatever
it
is.
It's just a lever that they use to pry open your wallet for more stuff.
Right. So I can, for example, say to Google Home, I can say, play this song or this album or this artist, or, you know, play smooth jazz, or, you know, whatever I want to hear.
Right.
And I get it. What I get from the Echo Dot, which is not its trigger word, what I get from the Echo Dot is, yeah, you're not connected to that.
You need to have Spotify Premium or Amazon Prime Music.
Right. Right.
And then it will go and fetch those things for you.
Right.
However, I will tell you this. I am frugal.
Yes. Good.
This is not... This should not be a surprise to anybody who can hear me.
Right.
So I did get one of these for Christmas, and I said, all right, well, what can I do with this without spending any more money?
Right.
And it turns out there are a number of things you can do. You can go to alexa.amazon.com, log in with your Amazon account, and if you go to the music section, they will let you upload 100 songs. So you can put your favorites on there and then play them.
Yep.
That doesn't cost you a dime.
Right.
You can also go to what they call the skills section, and this is sort of like the app store for the Echo. And they have dozens and dozens of different skills. The one that would prove to be popular at my house prior to the Echo Dot's exodus.
Right. Banishment, really.
Was the Jeopardy game.
Oh, yeah.
So every day they'll give you 6 different Jeopardy questions, and you can answer them. And if you do really well, they'll tell you how many other people who are playing Jeopardy that day did as well as you. Sometimes it's a lot of people if the questions are easy. Sometimes it's not as many if the questions get harder. So those are 2 things that we've done. I've been monitoring the skills store and waiting for the killer app. Here's why you would want this. Here's why you should go buy a Dot. Here's why you should go buy one of these things. I think we're so early in this ecosystem that it's a lot like the App Store in 2010 or 2009?
When it was 700 fart
apps
things,
and tip calculators. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep, exactly right. And
so I think that's where we are.
And battery watchers.
Right.
Right. We're going to see some amazing things come for both these devices.
Yeah.
But mostly they're not here yet.
Yes. What I can say is I think the Echo Dot, and I don't have the larger one, the hardware is fantastic.
Yeah, it really
is. It is surprisingly good at what it does. It's able to hear me from a couple rooms away if I ask it to do things. Most of the time we're asking it, hey, what's the weather? So we can make sure to get the kids in the right type of jacket for the last few weeks when the weather's been bouncing up and down temperature-wise.
Right.
But that and setting timers so I don't overbake the pizzas, that kind of thing at home. So it's been good for those kinds of things, but I'm still kind of waiting for the killer app, the reason why you would absolutely positively buy one of these.
Yeah, it's not there. Now, I will say that with the Google Home, I can say good morning to it.
Okay.
I can say, hey, trigger word, good morning. And I can set up in my app, in the phone app that connects to it. It'll read me the NPR news and all that other stuff and the weather and pretty much anything I wanted to read.
Yes.
And I like that. I also like the fact, we'll get to the phones in a second. I also like the fact that the other day, I forget what led me to it, but I'm retired. I found out about solfeggios. You know what solfeggios?
You're going to have to clue me in.
Okay. It started out as certain frequencies that they say are good for the human body.
Okay.
Now, of course, if you talk to a sound engineer, they will say that so much eyewash because
I work with several.
Because the sounds don't penetrate to any depth in the human body whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, there's one that's specifically good for tuning your DNA.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And they're saying, yeah, no. But the point is, I said to my Google Home, play me some Solveggio music. And it did.
It knew what that word
there's
meant.
Apparently a there's apparently a whole genre of like electronic, what used to be in the 60s called head music.
Yeah.
Now solfeggio, I suppose. And it's all, you know, flutes and horns and people going, and I was just tickled pink. Alexa said, you can't do that until you connect your Spotify account. So I don't even know if Spotify has it, but it's not going to play me anything.
Okay. Well, if you have Spotify at home and want to call in and tell us about it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. At work, because I use Google a lot.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
As far as looking stuff up. And we were getting the break lunchroom there, and somebody was wanting to, I forget what we were looking up. Somebody goes, well, let me see if I can find something on the web for it. Okay. I just had my phone sitting there, and I just said the magic word, and I said the phrase, and before that other person can finish typing, all of a sudden she's coming back and giving.
Yep.
Oh, right.
Wait a minute, you didn't even touch it. I go, yeah, I don't have to.
It's magic, yeah.
I go, that is cool. As well, right. Most Android phones, you can do it.
It's built in. They're all anything with 6 or 7 is getting the Android assistant if it doesn't have it already.
If not, you can always go to the Google site, hit the microphone, and talk into it, and it will go off and find it for you.
And that'll even work on your iPhone. You can go get the Google app and hit the microphone button and do it. And it's a really, really good voice recognition system.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's really kind of amazing. Well, Google did it right. They crowdsourced it.
Yes.
Did you hear this story?
Goog 411 way back when.
Yeah, Goog 411 originally, and then voicemail in Google Voice.
Oh, yeah.
They would ask people to correct the transcriptions.
Right.
What they were actually doing was training the voice recognition module.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Smart move.
Millions upon millions of people trained the voice recognition unit for every language, every inflection, every dialect, everything. It was great. Brilliant. Brilliant move.
Clever.
All right, we should go to the phones. Poor Scott's been waiting forever. Friend of the show, Scott from Buffalo. How are you, Scott?
Miserable. I own an iMac, an iPad, and an iPhone. They're all connected to each other. Typically, if I enter an appointment in my calendar on my iPhone, all three will show the same calendar within a reasonable amount of time.
Right.
But all of a sudden this week, all of the calendars, appointments, every appointment from now until forever are not exhibited on my iPhone. I can see them on my iPad or my computer. Not on my iPhone. And you know, when I go to add a new one, it doesn't show up on my iPhone. Only shows up on the other two things. So I'm not sure what's going on.
So, all right. Now, the first thing I have to ask is, has your iPhone changed in other ways as well?
Have you installed a software update recently?
Right.
I haven't. The problem is it updates at night.
Okay.
And so I don't know when it's updated either.
Okay.
I think it may have updated on Thursday, but I'm not sure.
Usually, if it doesn't update at night, it will also need to restart the phone. And if your phone restarts, when you go to pick it up in the morning, it will ask you for your passcode. And at the top, it will give you a message that your iPhone, whenever it restarts, has to have a passcode entered. You can't just unlock
Friday.
It with your fingerprint.
Right.
So Friday is when I updated Thursday night again. So Friday. Yeah, I had to use a password.
Okay. All right. One of the things that can happen, and I don't know if it's on your phone or if it might be on one of your other devices, and this is the thing that I see the most often in this particular case where things are showing up in one place but not in others, is there's a setting in each of these devices that says, when I make a new calendar entry, add it to this particular calendar by default. And sometimes that default calendar setting can move away from what you really want it to be towards something that Apple has picked, you know, by random.
That would be in settings?
That would be in settings on the phone, and on the iPad it'll also be in settings, and then on the Mac I'd have to look it up, but that's the first thing to check.
Well, also check that you're the right user, that you're logged in as the right person.
Right. The other thing we didn't ask yet is this associated with your iCloud account, or is this a Gmail account or some
other
service?
Well, recently I connected everything to my iCloud.
Okay.
The so I don't know what that's going to mean.
Is from your computer, go to iCloud.com, log in with your Apple ID.
No, I did. I mean, I'm connected to the iCloud with my phone, and everything is connected by way of the iCloud.
Right.
I'm not certain what that means in this case.
If you go to the iCloud.com website and log in with your Apple ID and click the calendar button, you can also see what Apple thinks the truth of the situation is, because that's the centralized place where they store all this information before it gets pushed out to your other devices.
Okay.
So you can see if a test appointment that you put in ends up at all of your devices.
All right. I'll try it. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks.
Got it, Scott. Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
Goodbye.
Thanks, Scott. Now, I will say that both Alexa and, the Echo Dot and the Google Home.
There you go.
Both gave me a Chuck Norris fact on his birthday. So
okay.
They both do that.
Yes. Yes.
I will say that.
And Chuck Norris looks at the clock to tell the clock what time it is.
Right. Yeah, I forget what they were, but they were both pretty funny.
Chuck Norris does not sleep. He waits.
Yeah, right.
The Echo Dot also has that flash briefing for the news that you were talking about. That they do have that, and I've been working on trying to figure out. You can also write your own what they call skills.
And that's what I'm talking
and,
about.
And I know you were interested in figuring that out.
It doesn't. They've got both Amazon and Google have. The ability to program them.
Right.
And we'll talk more about that when we come back. Right now, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, let me just say one more thing specifically about the Amazon Echo and Dot. For those of you who use them, you know that you can order stuff by just telling it to order something.
Yes, I've heard about this.
If, on the other hand, you don't want it to automatically order things for you in either the app or online, you can turn off purchase by voice.
Okay. I'm looking for this now.
Yeah. So you go into settings and voice purchasing, and you can turn off purchase by voice, which means that if I were to say, hey, device, buy me a pallet full of dog biscuits, you won't get them.
Okay. Well, that would be good.
That would be good.
Unless you're the dog.
Yeah, or unless you're the dog. Right. And as soon as the dog actually learns to talk,
you're in
trouble. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Carl from Rochester, New York. What's up, Carl?
Hey, hi, guys. Well, I'm trying to understand my wife's laptop.
I can't help you understand your wife.
No.
I am sorry.
You called the wrong show.
No. This is not about my wife. It's about her computer.
That we can help you with.
That we can do.
Yes.
You've come to the right place.
No, it's the car guys that give marital advice.
Right,
right?
Exactly.
We don't go there.
It's not good for anybody.
It's a Dell Inspiron with running Windows 7. And when you go to the My Computer and you look at the hardware, the laptop is shown with a little orange, little yellow triangle with an exclamation mark in it. And when you go to that, it says the Microsoft Peridot tunneling adapter is disabled. And the two questions are, what the heck is that? And number two, is that an issue that needs to be addressed?
Was this at one point or another a business computer?
Yes, somewhat.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What happens is many businesses set up their computers so that they tunnel in using a virtual private network, a VPN, to the home office. At that point, the computer thinks, well, the network thinks the computer is on the local network, no matter where it is in the world.
I see.
So you can set up your network to only allow certain things to local systems, like okay. access to databases.
Sure.
So when you do something like that, when you set up a virtual private network, you need some sort of tunnel, they well, call it, to go through the internet.
Yeah.
And it looks like what happened is when your wife got that computer as a personal device from the company, they disabled that tunneling adapter, which is fine.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, she didn't get it from the company, but she used to be the training director for United Way's cash program.
Oh, there you go.
And I believe, in fact, they had it on their virtual network when she was doing that.
That would be
right. And then when
likely.
She stopped, they disabled it or remotely or before she left. Right. And so now the tunneling adapter is saying, I'm sorry, you're not connected to anything.
No, all this is a long way to say.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Don't
just
worry.
Ignore
fabulous.
It. Yeah, just ignore it.
You,
it's all good.
You guys are tremendous. I've been listening to you for 20 years. I'm a member.
That's what we want to hear.
So hey. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Carl. We appreciate
member.
It. Thank you so
Take
much.
Care. You bet.
Thank you so much.
What a nice guy.
Very nice. Very
yeah.
nice. Wow. We do get people who know who we are. We were out at we went for hibachi on Thursday. It was my Ooh. Daughter's birthday.
Hibachi's fun.
She's in Arizona, but that did not stop us from going out for hibachi for
That's
her birthday.
A long hibachi.
And there were a couple people there who recognized me or my voice, I suppose, one way or the other.
Right.
And it's always very nice when people are polite about that. So it worked out nicely.
I had my very first experience with that last month. Well, 2 months ago.
There you go.
Somebody came in to work, recognized my voice, and said, "Are you on Sound Bites?" And I said, "From time to time, periodically,
yeah."
The Dennis Worcester? I've never been the Dennis Worcester before, so that was very surprising.
Yes, and here you are.
So I said, yeah, hey, well, you know, thanks for listening. Shook his hand, and he said, all right, cool.
So, you're a local celebrity now?
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah, that's exactly Apparently. It. That's one of the people said that to me Thursday night. He said, wow, you're a celebrity. I said, you need to get out more, clearly.
Thank you?
Yeah, that's right. That is the correct response. Thank you.
Yes.
But it does
with the question mark at the end.
Yeah, I know celebrities, and I don't think of myself as one.
Mm.
But
never pay for garbage plates when you go out. I'm sure.
Yeah, that actually is true. But that's because I just generally don't eat garbage plates.
Well, then there you go.
Not the other way around. Although I love them, I don't eat them. All right, our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. How are things in Batavia, Pat?
We're doing real well, Nick. A week ago, and at least in my house, we were without power for a day, and so we skipped it this time. I know a lot of people were out
right.
for a lot longer.
Right,
you'd already
in our area,
done it.
Some still are, but anyway, we're good this time. I have a question for your, is it Dennis?
Dennis.
Okay.
Handling Steve's chores for the Mac, right?
Right.
I'll do my best.
Okay. Now, I have discovered that my wife has been using her iPhone 6 in a stealth mode, no display.
No display.
Or, I don't know, maybe a year.
Wow.
Because she's blind, she just uses the voice commands.
Sure.
Okay.
So, my question is, if I wanted, I hope she doesn't hear me, but if I wanted to see what's on the display, how did she actually turn the display off? Do you have an idea on how to turn it back on?
Oh, man, this is a great question. I've never been asked this before. I know that the iPhone has a really strong history of being a device that is very popular with people with vision impairments.
Uh-huh.
And.
Yeah.
And I've listened to a podcast that is put on by one of these people, and they say that the level of interaction that you can still have with the phone is really amazing. It's not perfect, of course, but it's
Well, yeah, she
it's
has
so
no
surprising.
Problem. I'm just, you know, sometimes, when, not so much now, but in the past, she used to say to me, well, what's on the screen?
Right.
If she got stuck somewhere, and I could look at it. And apparently she's gotten much better at it. But now I'm kind of curious, you know, if the phone is sitting around and I want to answer or, you know, do something for her with the phone, I can't because there's no display.
Okay. Well, I does she have a tool on it called Scruff? Does that mean anything to you?
Doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay. Well, what I'm seeing here online, anyway, is that if you go to, well, of course, all of these things remind. I'm looking online for for answers here, and mm-hmm. so many of them require that you can see the screen in order to do it. Did you say that the screen is completely dark?
Screen's completely black. Yeah.
Oh boy.
I tried a couple of these where you turned it off and turned it back on, and that didn't seem to work.
Amazing. We are furiously Googling here on our side of the microphone, so we are very interested in finding this.
While you are furiously Googling, I'll mention something else I think is kind of comical.
Okay.
I was watching a tutorial on the Chromebox, which
yes.
you may or may not know is a text to a screen reader for the Chromebook.
Right. Interesting. Okay.
And so the person is doing the tutorial, very knowledgeable, very well-spoken, very articulate, starts by saying, look in the upper left-hand corner. And I thought, okay, if this is for the blind, why are people telling me to look on the screen?
Yeah.
And I also heard the same comment about Amazon now has a special phone number for blind people, blind users, to call so they can get directly in contact with help. And someone asked why you would do that, and they said because sighted people typically will tell them to. Even if you, after you tell them you're blind and you're using a screen reader, they'll typically say, oh, well, look in the upper left corner, the lower right corner. And there's no such thing as that with a,
right.
without vision.
Okay, well, I guess they call it blind assist. And I'm doing a little bit more searching. Let's see. It's an easy one. Listen to this, Pat.
Information for older people like myself that still use a paper calendar.
Well, Pat,
when they run out of date, don't throw them away because you will be able to use them in the future. Right now, I'm using my 2006 calendar.
There you go.
That's right. Yeah, you've got a 1 in 7 shot of it being useful again.
Well, if you hold on to it long enough, it eventually will come back into date. And this is the 2006 calendar. Is accurate for 2017.
Good to know.
If you hold on to it long enough, it will come back into vogue. This is why I still have my bell bottoms.
Yeah, fashion, of course. It swings like a pendulum, or like a bell bottom.
Like the bell bottom.
So they call it blind assist mode. At least that's what I'm told here. They say if you click the home button 3 times, you know, just like Judy Garland in those red shoes,
mm-hmm, right?
You can get back to sighted mode.
Now, what's interesting, how do you think she got into that? Do you click it 3 times to make the display go away? And who is the bright person that thought of making the display go away?
You know, I think you have to go into settings and enable
setting. No, she can't because she couldn't see.
Well, if you have
a
screen reader turned on, the phone will let you know what's on the screen and what section that you're looking at. And from there, you can make selections. Usually by using some of the buttons on the phone itself. But, the part I found was just about getting out of it. I didn't... let me see if I've got another section about how to enable this.
Well, if it's not to bother you with that. But I was just somehow she stumbled onto it. So apparently you can relatively easily shut your display off.
Yeah, I think if you go into settings and then general and then the accessibility...
Well, like I said, she did it accidentally.
Well, right. But you can turn it back off again by doing that, or you can just leave it on and whatever you want to do.
Right.
She just says, mind your own business. My phone's my phone.
That's fair.
You cited people rely on vision too much.
That's right. That's true.
That's
She's right.
Comment, so.
She's got a point.
Okay, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks for giving us a call, Pat.
I'm still listening, but I'm going to hang up.
Well,
thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's some. There are really some kind of amazing abilities. I have a friend who's a lawyer, and his reception person is blind, and he, boy, I'll tell you what, he's amazing. He's amazing. He spends all day long with the phone in one hand and the iPhone, the business line in one hand, and his iPhone in the other, and he has it send messages to people and connect to people and. Set things on their calendars and do just everything that he needs to do.
Right.
And clearly is exceptionally good at it. So
well, I think we're moving into, we may already be there, into an era when using your voice to control things is is relatively accepted, and it's becoming the type of thing where you don't want to, clearly, you don't want to text and drive at the same time.
Right.
But if you still want to send a message, you'll hit the button and your car will chime, and then you'll have it send a message for you.
Yep. And I can do that from my wristwatch.
That's right.
While I'm driving, and I have.
For sure. But the interface of that is becoming useful not just for people with vision impairment, but it's useful for the rest of the planet as well.
Yep.
It's super interesting to see how the technology has worked and has been useful for everyone, not just for people who might otherwise have trouble.
Yeah, Tom has offered to come on and talk about visually impaired, the use of computers and phones for the visually impaired. We should definitely do that.
Oh, yeah.
And Pete has done the same for the physically challenged. And so we may have either or both of them on at some point in the future. We have to figure out what's going on in your future, but we'll talk about that.
And don't forget, if your eyes just aren't as good as they used to be, not even just if they're not working at all, but if they're not working as well as they used to be, you can do things like go into settings and then general and then accessibility and look for settings that let you zoom the screen or change the size of the text on the screen to make things easier to see. There's no reason to not bend the technology to fit you a little better.
Right. I talked to people several times who said, I need to get a bigger phone. Or you could just make the display larger, the stuff larger on the screen.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick.
Okay.
All righty. You having fun there, Dave?
Everything all right?
Dave momentarily fell asleep, banged his forehead on the board, and that's what happened.
I'm fine.
But I'm fine. That's all good. But we are, that music subtly tells me that we're out of time for this hour, but luckily for you, we're going to do it all over again. So don't go too far away. You want to come back in just a few minutes because Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, Jillian Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you will all be here for another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites. It's the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Jillian Worcester.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And I forget what we were talking about.
What were we talking about?
Doesn't matter. I'm going to read the news.
Okay.
Oh, I'm bored with that.
All right. Maybe some different news. Alternative news?
Oh, here we go. Apple traditionally reveals its updated version of the Mac OS at the annual Worldwide Developers Conference in June.
True.
This year's events takes place June 5 through 9 in San Jose.
Also true.
And details on the latest version of the desk-bound operating system are starting to come out. Tim Cook and his team have been working on the update to Mac OS, as witnessed by the increasing number of visits showing up in the log files of Mac news sites since the start of the year. As yet, there are no details on what to expect in the latest update to Mac OS, but the indication of this being 10.13.x and not an 11.0.x suggests that Apple is continuing to take an iterative approach to its desk-bound operating system. Given the lack of primary focus on the Mac range, that is expected but disappointing. iOS picks up major changes each year with new features added and more potential offered to developers and consumers.
True.
As for Mac OS, it seems like it's getting just enough love to keep it running on the latest silicon, but there's no great frontiers being exploited or explored. Careful maintenance is exactly what you would expect from those watching over a mature operating system, but that's not evidence that those behind it care for the OS, that they have a vision or are continuing to push the boundaries of what can be done. We can definitely see that in iOS, but not in Mac OS. Yes, the hardware has the new programmable touch bar, but that's kind of a slight tweak to the UI environment on top of a slightly faster chipset. Is that going to be the sum total of what Mac OS can deliver in 2017? Once you take that data point of a moribund OS, add the lack of genuine new developments in the hardware, and combine that with the disbanding of Apple's dedicated Mac OS team, the conclusion conclusion is clear. Apple has the resources to invest in the Mac range of laptops and desktops, but it chooses not to. Unless something changes drastically, the glory days of the MacBook are over. Bar some tweaks and specification bumps, the Macintosh you see today is pretty much it. So here's a question. Do we even care about anything other than tablets and phones anymore? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
I agree with probably the first two-thirds of that article.
Yeah.
But in terms of what features are coming, I think that one of the biggest things that we've been looking at and that developers have known about is a new file system. Of course, the Mac OS has been living on top of a file system that's been around since, what, 98 or so, HFS Extended?
Yeah.
And the new HFS Extended came about in an era when... one gigabyte hard drives were considered really, really big. And now you can't hardly even buy a phone with that little storage on it anymore. So the new file system is called APFS, the Apple file system, and it's going to have a number of features that are going to make life a lot easier for system administrators and also will also help keep your data better protected and far less likely to become corrupted. So it's going to use checksums to make sure that you've got the data integrity that you need for those. But it's also going to have encryption built in and have the option for that. It's going to make sure that you can do snapshotting so that if you want to restore from a point in time, you'll be able to do that at the file system level. And you'll be able to make clones so it's really fast, power-efficient copies from one spot on the volume to another one. And you don't have to occupy additional storage space to do it. You're going to be able to modify the data and have the new data written elsewhere to share unmodified blocks. It's going to be really impressive. Now, that's not a great feature to put on the side of the box, and I admit that. But in terms of stability and data integrity, I think it's going to be a giant leap forward to be able to tell, hopefully the days will go away when I have to visit a client and say, well, we're going to need to go to your backups because something got corrupted on your main hard drive and we're going to have to restore and go through all that time and hassle. I'm looking forward to having a great integrity on flash media, which is what all the Macs are coming with these days. Right. And I think that a lot of the features that are coming out, again, are not super sexy marketing features, but they are... fantastic infrastructure that makes life easier.
Right. And I believe that what's happened is one writer on one website was disgruntled at the lack of flash, not the flash hardware.
Adobe Flash?
No, the sex appeal.
Oh, yes.
You know, okay. There's sizzle. Nothing new. There's no new sizzle for the Macs this year. And that angered him. And then a whole bunch of other people picked up on it.
Weren't we talking earlier about media that really wants to just drive eyeballs to their
site? That's exactly right. And nothing drives eyeballs to the site more than something Mac sucks.
Well, yeah.
People go and read the article and hate it and respond. And that's all they care about.
Right.
You know, they don't care if you like it or hate it. You read it, you interacted with the site.
Right.
They can say to the advertisers, look, here's one more person.
Yeah. Well, I'll give a shout out to a fellow Mac administrator who I know is listening, Steve Uroff. And hey, Steve, if you want to call in and tell me where I'm wrong or tell me what I've got right or something I forgot to say, let me know.
Yeah. I think that Macs are, in general, clean.
Yeah.
Well designed, both hardware and software, and if you're willing to work within that paradigm,
it'll work.
It's exceptional.
Right. Well, in the same way that a Chromebook is.
Exactly. If that's the paradigm you prefer,
it'll work.
It does everything you need it to do.
That's true.
And the problem is when people either see something that on another machine that they
hear about,
suddenly realize that my machine better do that, or you know, whatever. But the point is that people get bored.
Well, yeah.
You know, if it just works every day, that's real. There's no sizzle there.
Well, see, as I've gotten older,
You and boring. I understand exactly.
Boring starts to sound like a really great feature.
That is exactly correct. That is exactly correct. I want no surprises.
I want a dial tone when I pick up the receiver. That's
exactly.
What I want.
I want no surprises. But for some people, they, you know, for journalists, you can't write about, well, nothing changed.
Good news.
Years ago.
Everything's fine.
Years ago, the Y2K bug.
I remember.
Right? I was on the air at Wham, not Wham, our news at the time. And they asked me to come in and spend the night talking about, you know, how the world is going dark one time zone at a time. Right, right. And I spent the entire night saying nothing happened.
Good news.
What's going on now in Sri Lanka? Nothing. It's all up. It's all running just fine. Thanks.
Right. What's going on? I'm cashing a paycheck for sitting here talking about nothing. That's what's going on.
Wouldn't that have been nice? Yeah. But yeah, there's, you know, there's only so many ways you can say nothing happened.
Right.
You can always say, oh, it was horrible. There was an, you know, mass hysteria, dogs and cats living together. Oh, but man. When nothing's happening, there's no way to say that except nothing's happening.
Yes. Continued success.
Right. Right. The 3 years people spent frantically rewriting all their COBOL and Fortran code worked.
Congratulations.
And so nothing went down.
Right.
And well, the same thing is true of the Mac. How is your Mac running? Just like it did yesterday.
Yep.
Well, I can't write about that.
I've got to find something. I need some angle, some edge. Give
right.
me something to grab onto. Need some traction here.
Right. So my Mac is running great is not a headline. No changes to Macintosh is a headline.
Check out this uptime. Yeah, no, it's,
right.
it's not.
Apple cannot innovate any longer is a headline. It all comes down to my Mac runs great every single day.
There was a person in the media who did say that the Apple can't innovate any longer, and that was, I think that came out from, what, 2012 or 2013, and just
and
after that.
And 2008 and 2007 and 2005.
And just after that, they shipped a radically new design for their Mac Pro Tower.
Yep.
They made it much smaller, much, much quieter, and it was a
was that the
dramatic
round
change. Yeah.
Well, I liked that one.
It was a very interesting
design. That
was
pretty.
It came with some limitations, admittedly, but it was remarkably different, and the VP of Worldwide Product Marketing, Phil Schiller, got up on the stage and said, oh, can't innovate, you know, and he joked about it. He said, well, take a look at this. Now, but the joke is that since 2013, they have not revised that equipment.
Right,
so for the last
right.
4 years, it's been the same thing you could buy last week is the same thing you could buy 4 years ago.
Right.
And the prices have not really shifted that much either. So
there
are legitimate concerns from the geek Apple geek community that are interested in trying to see, you know, Apple, if you are truly into this, if desktop operating systems are still something you are interested in doing, show us some love, you know?
Right.
Show us some new products. Show us some revised products. And they put out a laptop last fall that took a lot of courage for them to put out because it did not have the chipset that the Mac geeks were expecting.
Yep.
It had a feature that many Mac geeks did not fully understand precisely why they would want it. It was a strange time, and we're kind of still in that. And I'm hoping that when WWDC comes around, the Worldwide Developers Conference, that we'll see more about upcoming software and upcoming hardware that will be really exciting and interesting and something that we can put in place.
And really, there's two things. First, Apple is partially the victim of its own success. I mean, for years.
Well, the Mac is the victim of the iPhone success.
Well, and all of it is.
They're
right?
really an iPhone
right.
company now.
Right. That's exactly what they are. But for years, they innovated. Everything they came out with was new and different and exciting.
About every year.
And now it's been a couple of years with the same hardware. And the people who are used to this rolling set of innovations.
Yeah, the treadmill.
Are unhappy.
Right.
And I do get that, but the reality is the thing just works every day. And if that's your ecosystem and if you're happy to be in it, great. And of course, you're right. The other problem is there's always a new iPhone, a new iPad, changes to the OS, to the iOS.
True.
And then this thing just sits here.
Right.
It is what it is.
The good news is this has also meant that changes in the macOS have been backward compatible with hardware going back for several years.
Right.
So it makes it super easy to get the same OS on an entire fleet of hardware that you might have at your organization. I've got equipment at my house for my kids that is a number of years old. I'm almost embarrassed to say how old it is, but it's still able to run the latest OS. That's very impressive to me. So
yeah, and it should be.
And it makes management of them so much easier.
Well, they're taking it from the DOS side because you know, Windows was always backwards compatible.
Well, but that's been a problem for Microsoft. I mean, that's one of the reasons that they have the problems they have.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Apple has had, you know, we talked recently about Tim Cook has said they were courageous in removing the headphone jack.
That's one way to look at it.
Well, but the point is, Apple's always been courageous. There have been several times in Apple's history where they said, dear people who have our old equipment, too bad.
Sorry.
Yep. We're moving from Motorola to Intel now.
Or floppies to USB.
Right. So every time they've made an innovation, they've had the, if you want to call it courage, to say, you know what, we're making a break from the past. And what that meant was when they came out with a new operating system, they didn't have the baggage that Microsoft has always had. And when Microsoft says, well, we've got Mac OS 10 and it's going to be Mac OS 10, we've got Windows 10 and it's going to be great and yada, 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 yada. That's, you know, terrific. But the reality is you end up with compromise because of backwards compatibility needs, and sometimes that compromise leads to some of the issues we see with the hardware and with the software.
It can,
running on hardware. So, you know, all kudos to Apple for having the guts to just say we don't want the Motorola chips anymore. So you're going to have to buy. You can't upgrade anymore on the old Motorola machines. You can certainly put Yellow Dog Linux on it, but you can't.
You know, they've done a good job of transitions over the years.
They have gone pretty well.
The Motorola chips.
Unless you were the last guy to buy the Motorola machines,
there's always somebody who's the last person.
Right.
And when they shipped changed to PowerPC in the mid '90s, when they changed 10 years later to Intel. Now there are rumors that they're looking at ARM chips to do things. With OS X, they've had a lot more flexibility to jump from architecture to architecture that they may not have had in the classic Mac OS days.
Yep.
So I think they have a kind of a zone defense plan of, well, if Intel can't ship us the chips we need on the schedule that we need in the volume that we need, with the yield of usable chips, then we can pivot and we can jump to a different architecture. And we have that flexibility.
Right.
Not every place does.
No. Well, Microsoft doesn't. The majority of their tools work specifically well with Intel products.
Mm-hmm.
And they work less well with other products if they work with them at all.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you just recompile the Mac OS using any one of the thousands of legitimate tools out there.
Yes.
And you got a whole new architecture. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of moments with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, Jillian Worster, Mina Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, speaking of the security and stuff we've been talking about.
Okay.
Consumer Reports.
I know those guys.
Yeah, major source for gadget and appliance reviews.
Right.
Here in the U.S. Plans to start rating products on data security and privacy.
Okay.
Nice idea. On Monday, the nonprofit publication revealed a set of new testing standards that hope will push the tech industry to create safer products. The goal is to help consumers understand which digital products do the most to protect their privacy and security and give them the most control over their personal data, the publication said. Already, cybersecurity experts are finding new tech products, whether they are cars or smart teddy bears, that are often poorly secured, to put it politely, and easy to hack. Other tech products have been found collecting data on their users without the user's knowledge. Government agencies and privacy groups have tried to address the problem by designing new guidelines for the industry to follow. However, none of them has received widespread support. Consumer Reports, on the other hand, says that doesn't mean nothing can be done. Consumer pressure and choices can change the marketplace, they said. Although Consumer Reports didn't give a date, it will, and I quote, eventually, unquote, use the new standards to test and rate products. In doing so, the publication can expose which vendors are failing to protect their consumers, and the information can help inform the public about the products they should buy. When consumers vote with their wallets and their clicks, we've seen that companies pay attention, they said. To develop the standards, the publication collaborated with three digital consumer protection groups, including one led by the well-known security expert Peter Mudge Zatko. Zatko is the director of the Cyber Independent Testing Lab, a nonprofit that has come up with a rating system to test software for security problems. You cannot tell people everything's on fire and then not have anything positive for consumers to do, Zatko said. Consumer Reports has already made its testing available, testing standard available on GitHub, and it's looking for feedback. The publication is also hoping that industry vendors will use the standard when developing new tech products. We think these standards address a real gap in the marketplace, Consumer Reports said. Although the publication is mainly focused on the U.S. market, it's also part of Consumers International, a federation of consumer groups that's working to protect people's digital privacy across the world. So do you think Consumer Reports can get it right? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Of course, Consumer Reports had that trouble after the most recent MacBooks got announced, where they were doing battery testing and doing runtime testing and got crazy. They have a suite of tests that they do. And they were getting results that were very different than what Apple had been seeing in their product development cycles. And once they had a chance to work with Apple and work it out, Apple was able to discover, aha, well, you're doing things that are very typical, very untypical compared to what a user would do with your testing. And because of that, some of the processes behind the scenes were taking more CPU time than they should, and the battery was not lasting as long as it should as a result. But once they were, once they found out precisely what Consumer Reports was doing, they were able to find the branch of code that was responsible for that and to adjust it so that it worked properly.
Right, and they did some things like, for example, Consumer Reports had the screen brightness up full.
Oh, yeah.
And most laptops are set to go at 80% or something like that when they're on battery power. And so somebody at either Consumer Reports or the one that they sent for testing, whatever, had it set to 100%. And so that's atypical.
Right, right.
Right. So they tweaked those things as well.
Right.
Which
I guess is fine as long as you're testing everything at 100% brightness. But that does not represent what an actual user would do.
Right. And with most laptops, if you
unless
get a Windows laptop
kind of
or whatever.
Testing.
Right. Even my Chromebook, when I'm on battery power, the screen is at 80%. The processor generally running a little slower to give you more battery life.
Right.
Well, those had all been turned off on the Mac. And again, the people at Consumer Reports said they didn't do it. Apple said they didn't do it.
Uh-huh.
It's not important.
It's got to be somewhere.
The point is it happened, and so consequently they were getting, 4 hours on a battery, but that's because they were running everything at 100%, which is atypical.
Yeah.
Not that you can't do that.
It just doesn't represent the usage model that the manufacturer was expecting.
Exactly, and the usage model that most people use, and equally importantly, it should have been set to that by default, because that's the way they come off the assembly line, and so if you make the change that says, oh, I must run at 100% brightness and I must run at 100% CPU, then you've shortened your battery life. You did it on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, and that's the difference. And once Consumer Reports said, got it, we see what happened, we're happy to retest. They weren't trying to get Apple or any of that nonsense. They took what they were given, and it was not typical.
Right,
and they've had that issue a couple of other times, Who was it?
But when it comes to
somebody else,
when it comes to data security and things like that, I think that that's an interesting metric to start to use.
Yeah.
I think we're in an era now where that is becoming more interesting, and I think more consumers are interested in knowing when I buy my Echo, or when I buy my Echo Dot, or when I buy my Google Home, or when I buy my TV, my smart TV, or when I buy my Apple TV that has a microphone in the remote,
right,
and I ask it to do things, where does the data go? How is it being protected? When I buy this phone, you know, what do I need to know about this? And I think that that's a potentially useful spectrum for them to start placing measurements on. So I'm
yep.
interested to see where they're going to go with this. With any luck, it'll catch on. But I think it's a way that Consumer Reports can sort of innovate into the 21st century and provide consumers with additional information that they can use.
I agree.
One thing we should throw in, you know, talking about technology and things advancing and changing and everything else, to remind folks, for those devices that don't do it, tonight is the night that you have to spring forward.
Right. So set your clocks ahead 1 hour.
1 hour. Otherwise, you might be late for an appointment or whatever. If you got an alarm clock type of stuff that you got to do manually,
yep.
that it doesn't auto change like your computer
microwave.
Or your phone or that over the internet.
Sure.
You have to do it and do it tonight before you go to bed. Then that way you will not be late
right.
for yep. things.
Last year, of course, I'm retired, so I don't necessarily leave the house every day or put on pants. But last year I was teaching on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Did okay. you put pants on then?
I put on pants to do that, yes.
okay.
But yes, I got in the car.
We're just clarifying.
And I looked at my clock and I said, how the hell did I lose an hour?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
3 days ago we had to change our clocks and I didn't do it
that's
in the
right.
car.
The one in the car always gets me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's the thing, as you and I were discussing before. This is so stupid to do. I mean, they have changed so many
yeah.
laws and everything else to keep daylight savings time around, and some states don't.
Yeah, they don't.
Arizona doesn't.
Arizona doesn't
Parts
do
of
it.
Indiana, I think.
Hawaii, I think, doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like it serves no purpose, so why the heck do it?
Right.
Yeah, come on, Trump.
Yeah, really.
Get on this.
Yeah.
Give him something to do.
It's something that I think will make everyone happy.
Yeah.
Except the people who have to program the clocks in Linux and Windows and OS.
They'll just sell you new clocks. It'll be great for the economy.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it just forces out new products. But, I mean, it was, as we've said in the past, you know, it was great in its time, but that time has passed a long, long, long time ago.
Hmm.
We
yep.
do not need daylight savings time any longer.
It used to be called wartime.
Mm-hmm.
Because they instituted it for the war in order to save energy.
Yep.
But nowadays,
less lamp oil.
Right. Lamp oil and batteries and everything else, you
yeah.
know? By making it early, making the daylight earlier the ability to get out in the fields and get some work done before school started and everything
yep.
else.
Yeah. Good if you're an agrarian and you are...
But we are much less an agrarian society than we used to be, put it mildly. And so the reality is that I don't – if anybody can think of a purpose that daylight savings time still provides, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear it. But I don't think we need it anymore. Dave doesn't think we need it anymore. Dennis?
I think
we should
personally.
Vote it out.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or set them back, set them forward half an hour, and then just leave them.
I don't actually have a strong preference for whether we leave it at daylight savings or at daylight standard. I don't care. I really don't care.
Yeah, right. Pick one or the other. We'll adjust to it and just go on from there.
Yeah, it's exactly right. I mean, as it turns out, we have this weird 24-hour. 60-minute calendar system, time system. We have a calendar system that was instituted by a pope in the 16th century, and this is what we live with. You know, Gregory did some pretty interesting things, but this is what it is, you know.
That's right.
And mm-hmm. and now we're hidebound.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that in terms of date, I don't think we should honestly change anything. But in terms of time, I see no reason for us to have daylight savings time, mm-hmm. particularly when not all of the United States and certainly not the rest of the world does it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, there are much more agrarian societies than ours out there that do not do daylight savings time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not entirely sure why we still have it, why we still do it.
Only some states, so it can't be, you know, a federal law or anything else.
Nope.
It's just something they choose to do because, like you said, Arizona does it. There's a number of states that don't.
And did you guys ever hear about the calendar that they used at Eastman Kodak
oh, yeah.
for a while?
Oh, yeah.
Where it had an extra month in it called Sol. It was
we used to work off a 13-month period calendar.
Right.
Because every period had 4 weeks
four
in
weeks
it.
In
right.
It.
But
so it was a 13-period calendar.
So when you had a memo that would go out at Kodak, would it have the Kodak date on it, or would it have the Gregorian date on it?
Both.
It would have both? Okay.
Right?
Because they were using this, according to Wikipedia, they were using this at Eastman until 1989, before they finally got off of it. They were using it from 1928 to 1989. Had turned it into 13 months of 28 days each.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every date fixed to the same weekday every year. So that was interesting. So you'd lop off the odd parts of the month, and everything would end after the 28th day.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just how they chose to keep track of things.
It would be in what period you're... You know, it was for production in that, too.
Yeah.
You
at
know,
the end of the year.
When things were being scheduled.
It's a very George Eastman kind of thing to do.
You know, the seventh period, eighth period, you're going to be switching to this and that. And everything was going by periods. So it was a defined, you know, four-week bracket. Not worrying about, oh, well, you know, it's the end of the month or something like that.
Yeah. But
right.
But by the fifth week of January or the first week of February, you weren't lined up anymore. With the Gregorian calendar.
Right, right, right.
Yeah,
right.
No.
And you end up with one or two, if it's a leap year, extra days at the end of the year. How did they handle that?
The several advantages to the international fixed calendar. Every year has exactly 52 weeks divided into 13 months. Each month has exactly 28 days divided into 4 weeks. The calendar is the same every year, unlike the Gregorian calendar, which differs from year to year. That's like what we were talking about with the guy calling in about his calendar. That's
mm-hmm. right.
Useful a decade plus later. Or in 1995.
And Dolores called in and said she's using, what,
1995 works
five,
fine,
there
too.
There you go.
Good, good. So you can get your Windows 95 at the end of August.
There you go.
Movable holidays celebrated on the nth weekday of the month, such as Labor Day, would be able to have a fixed date. I'll keep reading more about this.
Yeah, but in terms, I don't know if we can, you know, calendars are pretty entrenched. But we're used to changing the clock, and
yeah.
there's no reason to not change it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Simply say, you know what, we're done with the changing. It's going to always be this. The only people who will have a problem with that are the people who write the TZ stuff, the time zone stuff for Linux and for all the operating systems. And they'll have to make one last change, and then they're done.
Yeah.
It makes sense to me. To do it, you know, if I'm traveling to another time zone, that makes sense. And if I'm putting things out for people in multiple time zones,
mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry anymore. This person in Arizona, and this person's in Washington, D.C., and this person's in the three counties of Indiana that do it, and this person's in Hawaii. It just makes sense to everybody gets the same thing, and we're all done, and it's done.
Yeah, I agree. I think that that you know, there's some public safety issues there as well with shifting sleep schedules for people,
right?
Having people commute. It's time may have come and gone.
Yep. All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here in the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a couple minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Jillian Worcester.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Dave from Bergen, New York on the line. What's up, Dave?
Hey, guys. I want to get your advice about something. For several months, I've been having a little trouble with our Wi-Fi, but especially the one computer that's furthest to the opposite corner of the house from where the router is.
Okay.
We have DSL, you know, the Wi-Fi router thing. And you know, for years, I've had no trouble, like listening to music, you know, streaming music or whatever.
Right.
But lately, it's like, if at that one computer, I can't even use it because it cuts out so often and it does buffering and all that stuff. So my question is, I mean, we had the router replaced and everything by Frontier, and it's still doing it on this one computer. And I was doing a little research, and it said that it could be like interference from other Wi-Fi sources around. Because I've noticed the last several months, we seem to have a lot more Wi-Fi networks available.
There you go.
Okay. Is that probably the problem?
Yes, it certainly can be.
Not helping.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Here's the thing. With any of your smartphones or tablets, you can download a program on the Mac. It's called, on Android, it's called Wi-Fi Analyzer. There's equivalent programs for Macs and everything else. And it will show you who is in your neighborhood, what Wi-Fi is active in your neighborhood.
Yeah, well, I'm using Linux on this computer, and you know, if you go to the Wi-Fi.
Right.
To the
you'll see 50 of them.
Yeah, what you call it. It shows a whole bunch more. I mean, there used to be like three or four, you know.
Right.
Now there's probably a dozen.
So here's the problem.
They're really, really powerful, probably the newer ones, I guess.
A lot of them are, here's the problem.
Yeah.
There are two standard frequencies that are used by routers.
Oh, the 2.5 and the 5?
2.4 and 5 gigahertz.
Yeah, okay.
Most people use 2.4.
Right.
So what I had to do, and I have a very similar problem in my house. Obviously, upstairs, I'm in the same room as the router. I can do no wrong.
Yeah.
But for my downstairs, for the living room and for the kitchen and for my wife, who still can't get Wi-Fi at the back end of the pond, I've moved most of those devices to the 5 gigahertz range because everybody in my neighborhood, and again, this is what the Wi-Fi analyzer tells me, who's at 2.4 and who's at 5.
Oh.
So I discovered that, and I shouldn't say this because the people who know where I live are going to start using 5 now, but nobody was on 5 but me and one other person.
Oh.
And so I set mine to a 5 gigahertz channel that did not interfere with their 5 gigahertz channel. 5 gigahertz doesn't travel as far as 2.4, which is why my wife can't get anything at the back end of the pond still.
Yeah.
But it's a clear connection. So I was having the problem you're having with the Roku box downstairs in the living room. I don't have that problem anymore because I've gone from 2.4 to 5 gigahertz.
So what do you have to change to 5 gigahertz?
Well, the router has to be capable of doing it, and the new ones are.
They gave us a new router a few weeks ago,
right.
And I'm pretty sure it was definitely an upgrade. We're even getting a little faster, you know.
There you go. So what I would suggest is you go into the router and make sure that the 5 gigahertz antenna is active.
Enabled, yeah.
And that you have, you've given it an SSID, a name, which needs to be slightly different from the other name.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you've got it protected with an encryption method.
Yeah.
And then you just go down to all of your devices and say, show me a list of all the devices. The 5 gigahertz one should show up, unless your machine is so old it doesn't do 5 gigahertz. And then you just pick
one
it.
Machine.
Well,
the one I'm having trouble with that I listen to music on and stuff way upstairs, it's like 13-year-old ancient Dell laptop. And it still runs great, though, on Linux Lite.
Right. Well, you may have an issue with that one.
Well, I tried using my phone, though. I was listening to music with my phone through a little speaker I have. That was better, but that even had a buffering problem.
2.4 gigahertz. Try it at 5.
Okay, so I can adjust the phone.
Right.
There should be, something on there. I have one more question,
sure,
though. There is, I was looking up something that I read about years ago and kind of forgot about, but these power line things that use the house wiring for a wired connection.
Yeah, power line converters.
Yeah, I looked up one, the highest rated one on several reputable websites, Extolo power line LAN socket.
Yeah.
Thing, and I mean that sounds for like $90. You get a couple of them. No, it's $80. You get two of them, and just plug one into the socket next to where the router is, and put the Ethernet in there, and then upstairs where this computer is that I'm having trouble with, I could just plug that in here and just have a Ethernet connection to it. Right?
That should work.
Okay,
again,
that sounds like a great idea instead of messing with all his Wi-Fi.
Well, sure. You can do that as well. The issue there, of course, is how old is your house? Some old houses have very noisy lines.
Yeah, it's an old house, but it was updated, like 20 years ago.
Well, there you go, then. It's all about how good the electrical wiring is. We don't care about the ceiling or the foundation in this particular instance. So, it's a good way to get Internet access without running extra cables or a Wi-Fi extender, which is another possibility, of course.
Yeah,
or any of that
I thought
stuff.
About that, too,
But that they work. They're not terribly expensive, depending on the brand you get. TP-Link makes an excellent one. Zycel, Z-Y-X-E-L makes a good one. There's a bunch of companies. Those are just the two I have in my head. But any one of those should work just fine. And as you said, you plug one into the wall socket near your router directly, not through anything, not a power.
No surge protectors.
Right, no surge protectors, none of that stuff. It's got to plug directly into the wall.
Right.
And then you plug an Ethernet cable into that. And then elsewhere in the house, you plug in the other unit and go an Ethernet cable from that to the laptop, and you're done.
Yeah, I think I'll do that. Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember what they cost, but they're not terribly expensive. $100-ish?
Yeah, it was like $80 for this particular one, Extolo one.
Yeah. So,
and the Extolo one also had an outlet. I mean, you can still plug something into that.
Many of them do. Yes.
Instead of taking up the socket.
Right.
Yep. Most of them, in fact, do that. So
okay.
$80, $100, $110. That range anyway.
Yeah, for $120. $160. I could get four of them, and we'd be all set for all our.
Well, yeah, and there's no reason not to get a bunch of them and put them everywhere.
Yeah, start with one and a pair of them, and then build from there.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the big things is the speed. Most of them have gigabit Ethernet into them, but there's no promise you'll get gigabit out the other end. But you theoretically, again, depending on how new your lines are, you will get something fairly close.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'll just get one and try it out and see how it works.
Yeah, excellent. Let us know.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You'll be our reporter in the field.
Yeah. Okay, I'll do that.
All right, thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's actually not a horrible idea. In older homes, it's not a great idea.
Right.
Like I said, but in newer homes, it's an excellent idea.
It can be, yeah. Does it work well if you have to jump off of different branches in your if it has to go through your fuse box?
That's the problem.
Okay.
That's where the noise starts to come in.
Mm-hmm.
You can, but now you've degraded the signal a little.
Okay, so you should not expect as good a speed.
Exactly, and the only and if you look at most of the ads for them, they either give you a theoretical speed, up to speed,
okay,
or they don't give you a speed at all. They'll say it's a gigabit connection.
Okay.
To the device, but they can't promise what's in your walls.
Right.
So they can't really give you a number. But the idea is, it's going to be better than the intermittent junk he's getting now.
Right.
And B, it depending on how new his wiring is and how many jumps he's got, it could be wonderful.
Yeah. Well, one thing I can say is if you are out there looking for a home, you are technically inclined, maybe you just graduated from college, you're looking to make an investment in some real estate, place you want to live, don't underestimate a small ranch house with an unfinished basement. You can wire that any way you want. That's a weekend project, and then you're good to go.
Is that the voice of experience?
It is. Yeah, it is so nice to be able to have access to all the joists and move things where you need to and run wiring the way it needs to be. So much more convenient.
Yeah, I live in a house that was built turn of the last century.
Uh-huh.
So
not so much.
Yeah, I don't poke a lot of holes in it, and we don't drop a lot. We started to do that. My father-in-law came over and said, oh, yeah, we'll just drop right through here and it'll be fine. No, you won't. There's going to be firewalls in between these walls. That's the way they built them back then.
Right. Lath and plaster.
There's at least three of them.
Chicken wire and
between. Oh. Well, that's just it. We don't get a signal in the room we call the library. Because it has slightly more books than all our other rooms. But you can't get a signal in there because it's got a curved wall, and that wall is full of chicken wire. Mm. It's a Faraday cage.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, it's like where my study is, you know, or my office I caught.
Yeah.
I had to cut through the wall to put in the pocket door.
Yep.
And I went through a circular saw blade, because of cutting through the...
Nails?
No, the chicken wire.
Oh, right.
Going through the lath plaster and the chicken wire. Oh, that was unbelievable.
Yep. And a lot of the old houses are built that way. A lot of the older houses are designed that way. Friend of mine was very upset. He moved into a new house, and he realized his outside door is thinner than my inside doors. And I thought, yeah, that's the way they build them now.
That's the style.
That's done. You know, my house may well have been built by a builder. It's all American chestnut downstairs.
Oh, beautiful.
See, that's a beautiful house. All right, that music tells me that you've wasted 2 solid hours of your life with this nonsense. And we are done for another week. I'm going to go home. I'm going to get warm. I'm going to put on my sweats, and I'm not going to move again. I want to thank Dave Enright. I especially want to thank Dennis Worcester, and particularly Jillian Worcester, for coming in and taking over for Steve Ray. He may be back next week. We never know. George will be here to play the best German music you'll hear all week, so don't go away. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back to see you next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe and the unknown universe. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours. Stay warm.